This is the American Ag Network Week in Review for September 8th. I'm Sabrina Hill. Coming up in a few moments, I talk with an expert about soybean cyst nematode. But first, Rusty Halverson has the week's top news.
Most in agriculture agree that it's critical that Congress passes a five-year farm bill before the current legislation lapses at the end of the month. Senate Ag Committee Chair Pat Roberts presided over the first public meeting of conferees in Washington on Wednesday.
Getting a farm bill done is paramount to any other issue and concern. Both the House and Senate recognize this need. Clearly, both have taken the steps to get us to this point today. We are very close to the finish line, but we still have a lot of work to do. Quite frankly, a lot of compromise that remains to be done.
The biggest divide between the House and Senate is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Two of the lawmakers selected to the conference committee are Senator Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota and Representative Kevin Cramer of North Dakota. They are opponents in one of the most hotly contested Senate races in the country of 2018. In her remarks on Wednesday, Heitkamp expressed a sense of urgency to pass a farm bill.
If anything, our farmers need the certainty of a farm bill. They need to know that this body can deliver certainty and a farm bill on time. That will grow optimism. That will grow their opportunity to continue to produce. And literally, it will give them something to take to the bank.
Cramer says a top priority is maintaining a good crop insurance program.
But of course, any insurance program is only as good as the data that it's based on. Unfortunately, for the pasture rangeland forage program, the rainfall data for western North Dakota was not adequate. The House Farm Bill includes report language that I introduced requiring the USDA to evaluate the coverage of NOAA weather stations in areas like North Dakota and consider alternative data collection methods to supplement their rainfall data.
Minnesota Congressman Colin Peterson said more than any one issue, he wants a farm bill.
We have one goal, and that is to get this farm bill done. Farmers are counting on it, and we've all seen the statistics on the decline of the farm economy, also on the struggles that we're having with trade, the news of the volatile weather, and the range of other challenges that farmers face. It makes no sense, and it doesn't benefit those farmers one bit to relitigate how we got here. It doesn't get us any closer to our goal.
North Dakota Senator John Hoeven was confident the members would find a compromise.
You know, we can put these two together and get an even better bill for our farmers and ranchers. We both start out recognizing that crop insurance is number one, right? So we maintain crop insurance. That's our number one risk management tool for our farmers. On the safety net, I think there's some aspects of PLC where the House did a better job. You create an opportunity for those reference prices to go up based on market conditions. I think that's better than the Senate version. But in the ARC program, I think we did some things that are better in terms of the payment rate. We both put more flexibility into ARC. We both improved ARC, right? So there's an example where we can actually work together and I think get a better ARC and PLC in a conference report than either bill.
Former House Ag Committee Chair Frank Lucas has seen his share of work on previous farm bills.
If you remember when we did the 2012 that became the 2013 that became the 2014 farm bill, wheat was $8 a bushel. Corn was $7. The pundits in this town said there would never be another bad day in rural America. You don't need a farm bill. But we created a safety net knowing that there would be another bad day. Cash commodity prices are essentially half what they were when we last met.
Opening remarks from the conference committee members lasted around 3 hours on Wednesday. Now that the public statements are out of the way, the remaining talks on the farm bill will likely occur mainly at the staff level and between principal lawmakers over key differences. Andrew Walmsley with the American Farm Bureau.
What I can tell in my discussions with staff and attitudes is progress is being made. Obviously, there's some issues that need to be made at the member level. But at this point, there's no indication that agreement can't be reached. But obviously, we're not into the landing zone yet.
Questions continue to be raised by some sectors of U.S. agriculture regarding the trade aid payment levels that USDA announced in August. USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue at an event this week.
We have used calculations that are known to economists that will calculate the tariff damages. These have been affirmed by the Council of Economic Advisors in the White House, as well as OMB, and we feel comfortable in that.
Purdue said USDA will be as transparent as possible in responding to requests on specifics about the payment rates. Some additional information could be revealed next week as USDA Chief Economist Rob Johansson is set to testify before the Senate Ag Committee in a hearing on agricultural trade. Scott Irwin, an agricultural economist with the University of Illinois, has some questions.
Given what has transpired, soybeans are by far and away the biggest export of the crops that we're talking about to China, and they've had, you know, clearly the largest magnitude of impact from the tariffs, and it makes sense that that would be much larger. The key to me is, you know, I would really like to see how they got a ratio of 43-1 for sorghum to corn payments. It's not so much that soybeans, you know, is over 80 cents. Corn should be much, much lower than soybeans. But one penny, and then you give 43 cents to sorghum, I'm just struggling with those relative magnitudes.
The National Corn Growers Association, during a meeting with USDA and White House officials last month, presented an economic analysis showing the prices have dropped by 44 cents a bushel, amounting to an overall hit of more than $6 billion. Under the White House plan, corn growers will receive payments at a rate of a penny per bushel, amounting to $96 million, the smallest amount of all planned direct payments, USDA Undersecretary Bill Northey.
It really was looking just isolating that tariff impact. So it was not a action of prices from a certain time period to now, trying to say that that general price action is completely reflective of the tariff impact. This needed to be in response to tariffs, so we needed to be able to look at the dollars worth of exports that are impacted by the tariff, and of course, because soybeans are such a higher percentage exported and a higher amount being exported, they're going to come in for a lot more dollars than corn, who has been impacted over the long run by the biotech non-approvals in China that has limited the ability for our products to get overseas. We are not including some of the other industrialized products like ethanol and DDGs. We're looking specifically at those ag products in direct exports. And so when you crunch those numbers, you get a significant difference in the impact because of the tariffs and the amount of product that's going overseas now to China.
The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations said on Friday the African swine fever spreading rapidly in China is there to stay, adding it was almost certain to spread to other Asian countries. Reuters News saying the fever was first detected in China in early August. It's been found in more than 18 farms or slaughterhouses. Purdue ag economist Chris Hurt.
Obviously, China has the money to buy more pork from the world if they need that. As a government, they're oriented to feeding their people and making sure people have the kind of food products they're interested in. And so I think here is the opportunity that we have to look at the U.S. with very large supplies of pork this fall, with depressed prices this fall, and the opportunity certainly to supply China with more pork. Now, again, China raises 97% of the pork that they consume. They import about 3%, but that 3% could be very significant this year, especially if they have severe African swine fever and have to have major imports. At this point, they're trying to get it under control. It's a difficult disease to control, so it's going to be in the market. But again, we tend to have had pretty depressed lean hog futures, and my sense is that with the African swine fever concerns, that the lean futures have been probably excessively depressed and may not be quite as weak as what the market has perceived in recent weeks.
Dustin Baker is an economist with the National Pork Producers Council.
Potentially, sure, it could open up opportunities for us moving forward to be able to ship more over there, but at this point it seems pretty early, probably too early to tell what the long-term implications will be.
Meanwhile, the top U.S. pork supplier plans to close a distribution facility and lay off more than 100 employees as record meat production and trade disputes pressure profits for meat packers. Smithfield Foods saying in a filing with North Carolina's Commerce Department that it will permanently shutter the Clayton, North Carolina facility in the coming weeks. I'm Rusty Halverson for the American Ag Network.
At the Farm Progress Show held recently in Boone, Iowa, I talked with an expert about soybean cyst nematode. Here's our conversation. Let's start off with your name and your title and who you're with.
I'm Sam Markell. I am a professor and extension plant pathologist at North Dakota State University.
And who are you here with today?
So there's a group of us with the Soybean Cyst Nematode, or the SCN, coalition. And so SCN is a problem across the country, and we have formed a coalition of private and public partners trying to increase awareness about the issues that SCN is causing our growers.
Now, for the North Dakota, South Dakota, North Dakota area, awareness is incredibly important right now, from what I understand, because where maybe growers in more Midwestern, lower states have had this problem, been dealing with it for quite a while, North Dakota area, it seems like they're more in the discovery phase.
Yeah, it's a newer issue. And so, of course, in North Dakota, we've got around 7 million acres of soybeans. We didn't have that 20 or 30 years ago. And South Dakota's not a lot different. But soybean cyst nematode's not native to our area. So it's spread up from Iowa, from Minnesota, and it's really in the last maybe 15 years started to show up in North and South Dakota. In North Dakota, it really we didn't see a whole lot of it until maybe 2009, 2010, and then we really started surveying. We found it in a lot of counties that we didn't expect to see it in.
How should growers be on the lookout for this?
What we'd really like growers to do is do some soil sampling. And this is particularly important if you're in the eastern side of the state, because that's where it's spreading the most quickly. And so soil sample at the end of harvest. And it's a really simple process. You just go in, take 15, 20 cores from an area where you might think it exists. So something like the field entrance, because the nematode spreads on anything that moves soil. So of course, equipment goes in and out of the field entrance. So we see it there a lot. So take those soil samples, throw it in a soil bag, and send it to a lab. And one thing I would mention is it's not the same as doing fertility sampling. You want to do a specific SCN sample. You're much more likely to find it if you've got it.
Let's talk a little bit about how it spreads. As you said, it is currently spreading, and that is a big part of the problem. How is this spread?
So SCN is a parasitic worm, and it forms a structure called a cyst. It's actually the female's body. It's really, really tough, and it's full of eggs. And when the eggs are in that body, man, anything that can move soil can move a cyst. So we often see it move on equipment, but it also move in water. It can move in wind. It's really robust, that cyst structure, and that's how we've seen it move across the whole U.S. in the last half century.
So talking about spreading through equipment, is there anything that you can do to help prevent that?
Well, certainly you could power wash all your equipment from field to field, but I don't think that's really a practical way to deal with it. I would caution growers, though, if they're buying a piece of equipment in North Dakota, that's maybe they're purchasing it in Iowa or southern Minnesota, get that thing clean down there, because it's not just SCN you'd worry about, it's other pathogens, like the one that causes sudden death syndrome. So cleaning equipment from long distance movement is really important, but field to field, I just don't think it's really practical.
Let's talk a little bit more about the awareness, and the coalition is out spreading awareness and educating people on this. The coalition itself is relatively new, isn't it?
It is and it isn't. That's a great story. So in the 1990s, SCN was running rampant across the I-States, Ohio, Missouri. It was causing a lot of yield loss. And so there was an SCN coalition that formed in the late 1990s. That's where this Take the Test, Beat the Pest slogan came from. And growers really responded. I mean, they started planting genetic resistance very quickly, and SCN was really brought under a good degree of control. It really was. What's happened recently is that the pathogen has overcome some of the genetic resistance in a lot of the country. Now, that's not necessarily the case in North Dakota and to some degree South Dakota, because it's a relatively newer thing, but the growers, again, are starting to take pretty high yield losses from this. And so we reformed the coalition in the last couple of years to try to increase this awareness again, get growers to think about actively managing this again.
All right. So for our grower listeners who are listening to this and paying attention to this, what would be a couple of the key messages that you really want them to take away?
SCN causes a lot of yield loss, and it can cause yield loss before you see above ground symptoms. 15 to 30% actually in areas of fields. So we really want growers to get out and sample, see if they've got it, and then I want everyone to know, especially in North Dakota, this is a manageable problem. We know how to use crop rotation. We have good genetic resistance that where it's not breaking down like it is in some of the other states. It holds quite well. And then in some cases a seed treatment can help.
Is there a website or something that where people can get more information?
Yeah, thescncoalition.com.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
This has been the American Ag Network Week in Review. I'm Sabrina Hill. For Rusty Halverson and myself, thanks for listening. Join us again next week.